Osho. No water, no moon. Talks on Zen stories. Discourse number 10. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
Bhagwan, just before Nanakawa passed away, the Zen master Ikkyu visited him. Shall I lead you on? Ikkyu asked. Nanakawa replied, I came here alone and I go alone. What help could you be to me? Ikkyu answered, if you think you really come and go, that is your delusion. Let me show you the path on which there is no coming and going. With these words, Ikkyu had revealed the path so clearly that Nanakawa smiled and passed away.
Death is the crescendo, the highest peak that life can attain. In the moment of death, much is possible. If you have been preparing and preparing, meditating and waiting, then at the moment of death, enlightenment is very easily possible, because death and enlightenment are similar. A master, one who is enlightened, can easily make you enlightened at the moment of death. Even before, whenever it happens, you have to be ready to die. What happens in death? Suddenly you are losing your body. Suddenly you are losing your mind. Suddenly you feel you are going away from yourself, all that you believe to be yourself. It is painful because you feel you are going to be drowned into emptiness. You will be nowhere now. Because you were always identified with the body and the mind, and you never knew the beyond. You never knew yourself beyond the body and the mind. You got so fixed and obsessed with the periphery that the center is completely forgotten. In death, you have to encounter this fact that body is going. Now it cannot be retained anymore. The mind is leaving you. Now you are no more in control of the mind. The ego is dissolving. You cannot even say I. You tremble with fear on the verge of nothingness. You will be no more. But if you have been preparing, if you have been meditating, and preparation means if you have been making all efforts to use death, to use this abyss of nothingness, rather than being pulled into it, you have been getting ready to jump into it. It makes a lot of a difference. If you are being pulled into it, grudgingly, you don't want to go into it, and you have been snatched, then it is painful. Much anguish. And the anguish is so intense that you will become unconscious in the moment of death. Then you miss. But if you are ready to jump, there is no anguish. If you accept and welcome, and there is no complaint, rather, you are happy and celebrating that the moment has come and now I can jump out of this body, which is a limitation, can jump out of this body, which is a confinement, can jump out of this ego, which has always been a suffering. If you can welcome, then there is no need to become unconscious. If you can become accepting, welcoming, but Buddhista kal tathata, to accept it, and not only to accept, because the word accept is not very good, deep down some non-acceptance is hidden in it. No, if you welcome, if it is such a celebration, ecstasy, if it is a benediction, then you need not become unconscious. If it is a benediction, you will become perfectly conscious in that moment. Remember these two things. If you reject, if you say no, you will become totally unconscious. If you accept, welcome, and say with your full heart, yes, you will become perfectly conscious. Yes to death makes you perfectly conscious. No to death makes you perfectly unconscious. And these are the two ways of dying. A Buddha dies totally accepting. There is no resistance, no fight between him and death. Death is divine. You die fighting. If a man has been preparing, getting ready, then at the moment of death, the master can be miraculously helpful. Just a word at the right moment, and the flame inside suddenly explodes. You become enlightened. Because the moment is such, so intense, you are so concentrated at one point. This is happening in this story. Ikku is one of the greatest masters. A very rare, revolutionary, non-conformist. Once he stayed in a temple, the night was very cold, and there were three wooden Buddhas in the temple. So he burned one Buddha to warm himself. The priest became aware, who was fast asleep. It was in the middle of the night, and the night was very cold. He became aware that something is going on, so he looked. Buddha was burning. And this man, Ikku, was sitting happy, warming his hands. The priest became mad. He said, "What are you doing? Are you a madman? And I thought you to be a Buddhist monk. That's why I allow you to stay in the temple. And you have done the most sacrilegious act." Ikku looked at the priest and said, "But the Buddha within me was feeling very cold." So it was a question whether to sacrifice the living Buddha to the wooden one, or to sacrifice the wooden one to the living one. And I decided for life. But the priest was so mad with anger, he couldn't listen what he was saying. He said, "You are a madman. You simply get out from here. You have burned Buddha." So he started to poke the burned Buddha. Ashes were there, almost. The statue was completely finished. He started to poke with a stick. Asked the priest, "What are you doing?" He said, "I am trying to find the bones of Buddha." So the priest laughed. He said, "You are either a fool or a madman. And you are absolutely mad. You cannot find bones there because it is just a wooden Buddha. Ikku laughed, he said, then bring the other two. Night is still very cold and the morning is still far away. This Ikku was a very rare man. He was turned out immediately out of the temple. In the morning he was sitting just by the side of the street outside the temple, worshipping a milestone, putting flowers, doing his prayer. So the priest said, "You fool, in the night you misbehaved with Buddha. What you have done, a sin you have committed. And now what are you doing? With this milestone, this is not a statue." Ikku said, "When you want to pray, everything is a statue." At that time, the Buddha within was feeling very cold. At this time, the Buddha within is feeling very prayerful. This man Ikku has thousands of disciples all over the country. And he used to wander from one place to another to help disciples. This story is about one of his disciples, Ninakava. He was just on the verge, almost enlightened. But almost enlightened means nothing. You can move back. From the last point also, you can fall. Unless it has happened, it has not happened. From the very last moment, when only one step, and you will become an enlightened one, you can come back. This Ninakava was almost enlightened, but still in the grip of the scripture. Because unless you reach to the truth, it is very difficult to get out of the grip of the scriptures. It is very difficult to get out of the prison of words. It happens only when you are really enlightened. Then you can look that words are just words. Nothing is there. They are not substantial. They are made of the stuff dreams are made. They are just ripples in the mind, nothing else. Sounds in the mind. And the meaning? Meaning is given by us. It is not there. No word is meaningful. And any word can become meaningful by common agreement. So it is just a social phenomena, not concerned with truth at all. But people live by words. If someone says something against Jesus and you are a Christian, you will be ready to kill him or be ready to be killed. It is a question of life and death. And someone said something against Muhammad, a Mohammedan gets mad. Just a word. Muhammad is just a word. Jesus is just a word, but people live by words. I have heard, once Mullah Nasruddin caught hold of a man on the street and said, "I'm in a very difficult situation. My wife is hungry, my children are ill. Will you help me a little?" The man looked at Nasruddin, he was really in a sad plight. He asked, "Why should I help you? But one thing I would like to ask, what brought you to this sad plight? How you became so miserable? What has happened to you?" Nasruddin said, "It is a long story, but to say in short, just few years before I was also a businessman like you. and beggars used to catch hold of me on the street. Everything was going wonderful. Then a catastrophe. The man became interested. He said, "Then what happened?" Mullah Nasruddin said, "My business was very good. Money was pouring continuously. Now, I was a very industrious worker, totally absorbed in my business, and I had a motto on my table: think constructively, act decisively, and money continued pouring." And then Mullah Nasruddin's frame started convulsing, and he said, "Then my wife burned the motto, and that motto: think constructively, act decisively. The whole thing depended on that motto, and my wife burnt it." That was the greatest catastrophe, and that has led me to this sad plight. Have you ever thought, if your scriptures are burnt, what will happen to you? If your mottos are burnt, what will happen to you? If your birds are burnt, what will happen to you? You will be in a very sad plight. That's why if someone says anything against the Bible, you become mad. It is not because he is saying something against the Bible. He is burning your motto. You depend on the word. And you depend on the word because you don't know what truth is. If you come to know what truth is, you will throw all the words, you will burn all the mottos. Mullah Nasruddin seems to be foolish. He is not. He is just a representative human being. The most representative, the normal. He is you. In all your absurdities, but magnified, of course. This Ninakava was struggling for his whole life, meditating, sitting, doing many techniques, trying in every way to get calm and quiet and still, but he was still in the grip of a scripture. The day he was dying, Ikku visited him. That was the moment now to push this man into the infinite abyss. He may miss, because at the time of death, if scripture is there, you will miss. You need to be totally vacant. You need to be totally empty. Only then you can meet death, because death is emptiness. And only the alike can know the alike. The same can understand the same. If you are filled even with a single word, you will miss. Because then the mind is there and death has no mind. Death has no thought. Death is simply falling into emptiness. So came Ikkyu to push this disciple at the last moment. He has been missing the whole life. He should not miss this last moment. And I also tell you, if you miss it whole life, then there is only one possibility and only one hope at the moment of death. But no need to wait for it. It can happen right now. If it is not happening right now, then go on trying. But get ready for death. If you are ready, I will be there to push you. If you are ready, then it is very easy. Just a little jerk and the mind blows. Just before Ninakava passed away, the Zen master Ikkyu visited him. Masters have been visiting always. It may not have happened actually. Remember that. It may not happen actually. It may be, it is possible that nobody else than Ninakava saw the master visiting him. It may have happened actually, but that is irrelevant. One thing is certain, that while Ninakava was dying, just at the last moment, the master was there. This dialogue happened with Ninakava and Ikkyu. There may have been many others. They may not have heard it at all. They may not have seen Ikkyu coming at all. It was not a physical visit. But it happened, and it did. Whatsoever was needed was done. "Shall I lead you on?" Ikkyu asked. Ninakava replied, a man of scriptures, particularly Buddhist, because in Buddhism the guru is not accepted. Buddha is the greatest guru, but in Buddhism the guru is not accepted. They have a reason for it. Because human mind is so complex, it creates trouble everywhere. The guru is to liberate you, but you can make a bondage out of him. Hindus have been teaching that without the guru, without the master, there is no liberation. And this is true. Absolutely true. But by the time of Buddha, it became a bondage. Without the guru, without the master, there is no liberation. So people started becoming slaves of masters, because without them there is no liberation. Look at the human mind and the stupidity. A master is to liberate. You can become a slave to the master, because only he can liberate. Then you can become just docile. Much slavery was created. Nobody else on this earth has created such a deep slavery as Hindus. You cannot come across a single revolution in the whole history of Hinduism against the priest, no. Whole thing was so settled and so fixed and systematized, and everybody was aware that if you rebel against the priest, there is no liberation. He is the guru, he is the master. The untouchables, the Sudras, have existed in the most miserable condition. They are the greatest slaves, and they have the longest history of slavery, but never they revolted against, because it was not possible. The guru, the master, the Brahmin, he is the door to the divine. You have missed this life, and if you rebel, you miss the other also. So remain a slave. Then came Buddha, and he said, no need for the guru. Not because there is no need for the guru. He said, no need for the guru, and he meant no need to become a slave. But that was the only way to say it. So Buddha says, be a light unto yourself. Nobody is needed to lead you. Nobody is needed to guide you. You are enough unto yourself. This is the greatest possibility of being free. Freedom. But you can misuse this also. This is the problem. Then you think that if there is no need for a master, then why listen to the Buddha? If there is no need to the master, then why go to the Buddha? If I am totally independent, then I am Buddha myself. That happened through Buddhism. Slavery didn't happen, but deep egoism happened. But both are the two extremes. Either you become an egoist because no guru, no master, nobody to follow, or you become a slave because without the guru there is no liberation. Can't you be in the middle? Can't you just stay in the middle without moving to the extreme? If you can be in the middle, the mind disappears. Came Ikkyu and he said, shall I lead you? Ikkyu asked the basic Buddhist question. And Ikkyu knows that if he is still burdened with the scripture, he will say, no, who can lead anybody? Nobody is a guru. Every soul is absolutely independent. I am a light unto myself. If he is burdened with the scripture, this will be the response. If he is not burdened with the scripture, then the response can be any. Infinite possibilities open. Ninakava replied, I came here alone. This is what Buddha says. I go alone. What help could you be to me? Everybody is born alone, goes alone, and in the middle, in the these two coming and going, you may delude yourself that you are with somebody, but you still remain alone. Because if you are in the beginning alone and in the end alone, how in the middle you can be with somebody? The wife, the husband, the friend, the society are all illusions. You remain alone. Aloneness is your nature. You can delude, that's all. You can have dreams, that's all. But the other remains always the other, and there is no meeting point. This is the basic Buddhist teaching to make man free. That's why Buddha even denied God, because if there is God, how you can be alone? He is always there. Even when you are in your bathroom, he is there. Because he is omnipotent, omnipresent. You cannot escape him wherever you go. He will be there. He is the cosmic eye, the cosmic spy following you. Whatsoever you do, he will be looking. It is very difficult to escape God. If he is, then he is everywhere. You cannot hide. This is beautiful if you can understand. And religious people used it to help. Hindus, Mohammedans, Christians, they have all used the omnipresence of God. It is a great help. Because if really you can feel God following you like a shadow everywhere, you will become very, very much alert and aware, because he is there. You are not alone. You cannot relax into sin. You cannot relax into ignorance, sleepiness. He is there. The presence will make you alert. This is the right use, but otherwise the presence can become a bondage, a heavy burden, anxiety. I have heard about a Christian nun who will not even take his bath in nude. No, she will continue to have her clothes even under the shower. So somebody asked, what are you doing? She said, how I can be naked, because God is everywhere. But if God is everywhere in the bathroom, he is inside the clothes also. You cannot escape him. He is inside you. He is everywhere. This can become a deep anxiety. Just like as you are taking your bath and you become aware that somebody is peeping through the keyhole. You become anxious. And the guard is the cosmic peeping Tom. On every keyhole he is sitting. You cannot do anything without his knowing it. You make love and he is there. Whatsoever you do, he knows, and everything is recorded. This can become a deep anxiety, a neurosis. This can create guilt. Then you have missed. And remember, every key that can open a door can destroy the lock also if you use it wrongly. There is a way, a right way to use a key, only then it opens the lock. If you use it wrongly, the lock may be destroyed. And as the mind is, it always uses keys in a wrong way. Then somebody is needed who must say to you, throw this key, because this key is now useless. This is only destroying the lock, not helping you in any way. Buddha said, no guru is needed. Because in his time, guru meant the Brahmin. Krishnamurti is saying the same thing. No guru is needed. But there is another possibility. It may give you freedom. If it gives you freedom, it is perfectly okay. But it may give you egoism. And that's the problem. There is the rub. If it gives you egoism, you may not become a slave to somebody else, but you have become a slave to your own ego. And remember, nobody can be such a dangerous master as your ego can be. Nobody can make you so blind as your ego can make you. And nobody can lead you to hell as your ego can lead you. Ikku just wanted to know whether this man is still clinging to the scripture or he has come to understand Buddha. Understanding is different. Clinging is different. Clinging is to the dead letter. If he has understood, then Buddha is the greatest master. If he has not understood, then he will not allow. Even at the point of death, he will cling to the scripture. Ikku was there standing and was asking, can I lead you? Shall I lead you on? Because the path is unknown. You have never been through it. I have been through it. I know how to die. I know how to celebrate death. I know how to lose yourself into death, and then you never lose. Then the real self for the first time is born. I know the secret of dying and rebirth. Can I lead you on? Ninakava replied, he refused. He said, I came here alone. And I go alone. What help could you be to me? And he was in need of help. If he was not in need of help, he would have simply laughed, smiled. He would have said, thank you. There was no need to use these words from the scriptures. Why? You use the scriptures, they are rationalizations. Whenever you are uncertain, you use the scripture, because the scripture is very certain. Whenever you are in doubt, you use Buddha, Krishna, Christ, because they can hide your hesitation. They can hide your reality. They can give you a false confidence. Whenever you are using others' words, you are hiding your ignorance. This man was not saying that I came here alone. This was not his experience. He was not saying that I go alone. He was repeating words. And you cannot deceive a master by words. Ikku answered, if you think you really come and go. These are the most beautiful words ever uttered. But the essence of all Upanishads, the essence of all Buddhas and Mahaviras. Just in one sentence. If you think you really come and go, that is your delusion. Let me show you the path on which there is no coming and no going. This is really very difficult and subtle. Says, if you think you really come and go, then the ego is there. Who comes? Who goes? If you think you come and go, you don't know, then you are simply repeating Buddha's words. There is the catch. If you have come to know that I come alone and I go alone, then there is no coming and no going. Because the soul is never born, never dies. Life is an eternal continuum. It continues. It never comes, never goes. This body may have been born, this body may die, but that life, the energy, the self, the soul, or whatsoever you call, the consciousness that exists in this body has never been born and will not die. That consciousness is continuous. There has never been any break in it. If you really know, then you know that there is no coming, no going. Who comes? Who goes? If you don't understand, if you have not realized this, then you will say, I come alone. But then this I is the ego. Then this I is not the self. Then you say, I go alone. The emphasis is on I. And the I is the bondage. If there is no I, suddenly you will see that you have never been born and never going to die. Then there is no beginning and no end. Says Jesus, somebody asks Jesus, that are you the Messiah we have been waiting for? Who are you? Tell about you. Jesus said, before Abraham was, I am. Abraham must have been thousands years before. And Jesus says, before Abraham was, I am. The sentence is really very absurd. Logically absurd. Grammatically wrong. Before Abraham was, I am. Abraham is in the past. Jesus says, before he was. And Abraham is the first prophet. There is every possibility that Abraham is just a changed name of Ram. Because in the old Hebrew, it is not Abraham, it is Abram. And Ab means simply respect, just like Sri Ram. It is just to pay respect. There is every possibility that Abraham is no one else than Ram. Says Jesus, before Abraham was, I am. For Abraham, he uses the past tense, he has been and is no more. The manifestation was there and now is no more. But I am, because I am always. I was, I am here, I will be. The innermost consciousness knows no birth, no death, knows no past, no present, no future, knows no time. It is eternal, and eternity is not part of time. Said Ikkyu, if you think you really come and go, if you think that there is a coming and going, you are in delusion. Let me show you the path on which there is no coming and going. What Buddhas have been doing, they have been simply showing you that you are perfect as you are. No change is needed. You have not to go anywhere. You have not to move a single inch. As you are in your perfect glory here and now. There is no coming and no going. Just become aware of the phenomena that you are. Just become aware who you are. Just be alert. And then nothing is to be achieved. No effort is to be made. Because from the very beginning, before Abraham was, you are. You have seen the creation of the world. You will see the end of the world. But there is no beginning to you and no end to you. You are the witness. And the witness cannot have any beginning and cannot have any end. If you have been alert, you would have seen your own birth. If you can die consciously, you will see that death is happening in the body and you are just an onlooker. So the body dies and you are just the witness. And if you can be a witness in the death, then the next life, the birth, you will be a witness. You will see that the mind is choosing a womb, hovering all around the earth, finding a woman, a couple, making love. You will see it. Just as if you are hungry, you go to the market, and you can be a witness that your eyes, your mind is looking at the hotels, restaurants, to find the right place where you can have your food. You are hungry. But if you get too much identified with the hunger, then you cannot be a witness. Otherwise, hunger is there. You are not the hunger. How you can be the hunger? Otherwise, who will know that you are hungry? Hunger to be known needs someone else beyond the hunger who can look and see, who can become alert. If you can become alert in hunger, then you can see how your mind is searching a right place to have your food. The same happens after death. Your mind is in search of a right womb. You choose. You see what is happening. If you are in search of a particular womb, if you are a very good soul or a very bad soul, then you may take many years to find the right womb. Very difficult. If you are just an ordinary man, just normal, nothing of a special, good or bad, neither a Hitler nor a Gandhi, then you can be born immediately. There is no need, because everywhere ordinary, normal, standard wombs are available. Then you, this moment you die and the next moment you are born. Not even a single moment is lost. But for Hitler, it may take many, many years, and it is good. We are fortunate. Because he is a very perverted soul, very perverted. You cannot imagine his perversion. He perverted everything, and whenever a man becomes perverted, the first thing to be perverted is his love. Because sex remains the root of your being. The first thing to be perverted is sex. When sex goes wrong, everything goes wrong. When sex is natural, everything remains natural. study Hitler's sexual life and you will be simply amazed. You cannot believe what he was doing. He will find beautiful women but will never make love to them. And what he will do, you cannot imagine. He will force those beautiful women, he will sit down and he will force. This would urinate on his head. What type of man, what he is doing? And he enjoyed it very much. Not only urination, this would defecate on him. And the women felt very much guilty what he is doing, but he was such a powerful man. If you don't follow him, he killed many. All his beloveds either were killed by him or they committed suicide. Because this is such a perversion. But he felt very good. What was the matter? He was so guilty, he wanted to punish himself. Even through love, he was punishing. He was so guilty, and the guilt was so strong. If you are so much guilty, you cannot love. Because love can come only of a heart who is not guilty, who doesn't feel any guilt, who is just a child, innocent. Then love flows, then it becomes a celebration. But if you are guilty, then through love, you start punishing yourself. Or you start punishing the other. You cannot enjoy love. Because you feel you are so guilty, so bad, how can you enjoy love? You create a hell out of love. This seems very impossible because Hitler, outside his room, is almost a god. People worship him. And inside his room, he feels himself so inferior, guilty, condemned, that he wants to punish himself, even through love. This type of man will not find a womb easily. Almost impossible. For centuries he will have to wait. Only then he can find such a womb, such a man and such a woman making love, who are so guilt-ridden, so condemned in themselves. Only then he can choose the womb. But this happens unconsciously. So you need not worry much about it. You die unconsciously, unconsciously you are born. It happens automatically. Just the mind moves, gropes in the dark and enters a womb. But if you die consciously, then the next birth is going to be conscious. If you die consciously and are born consciously, you will know that there is no birth and no death. Only body has been chosen. If you move to a new house, do you say that this is a birth? You remain the same, only the house changes. If you change your old clothes, do you say this is a new birth? I am born? No, because you have only changed the clothes, you remain the same. This is how one who becomes alert comes to know that all changes are just changes of dresses and houses and places, situations, circumstances, but you remain the same. Never the center changes. It is eternal. Says Ikku, if you think you really come and go, that is your delusion. Let me show you the path on which there is no coming and going. What is that path? Really, is there a path? Because we have to use language, that's why he says path. Otherwise there is no path. Because path always leads somewhere. No path can lead to you because you are already there. If you want to come to me, there is a path. Has to be. If you come to somebody, you have to follow a path, go through a passage, a bridge, something or other, because you are moving outward. But if you want to go inward, there is no path. You are already there. A sudden jerk is needed and you simply feel that you are there. It is just like as if you dream in the night. You fall into a sleep in Pune. And in the dream, you are back at your London home, are in New York, are in Calcutta, are in Tokyo. And in dream, you completely forget that you are in Pune. Then what is needed? Just a jerk. Somebody comes and wakes you up. Will you wake in London, Tokyo, New York, or in Pune? It would have been very difficult. It will create a very absurd world. If suddenly you were dreaming of New York and somebody wakes you and you wake up in New York, then this world would have been a nightmare, but you wake up in Pune. The dream disappears. Buddhas have been teaching this, that there is no need to go anywhere because you are already there where you want to go. But you are in a dream. In a dream only you have moved from the center. You cannot move from there. You are there. For millions of lives you may have been dreaming, but you have not moved from the center where you are. Nobody can move. Just a jerk. Just somebody to shock you. You become alert. And suddenly the dream disappears, and the dreamland and the New York and London, and they disappear, and you are here and now. This jerk, this shock can be given very easily at the moment of death. Because the whole body, mind is going through a great change. Everything is in a chaos. In a chaos, you can be made alert more easily because everything is uncomfortable. When everything is comfortable, it is difficult to bring a man out of the dream. Nobody wants really to come out of a comfortable dream. Only when the dream becomes a nightmare, then you scream. I have heard one night Mullah Nasruddin screamed so loudly that even neighbors came to ask what has happened. Mullah Nasruddin was sitting in his bed, weeping, tears flowing down, and the wife was consoling and saying, "It was just a dream, Nasruddin. Why you are creating so much nuisance? Neighbors have come. There is a crowd." Nasruddin said, "But the dream was such. Let me first tell you the dream. In the dream, I went to a wife auction. Such beautiful woman. One woman got 10,000 rupees, another 5,000, and many in thousands. I had no money. I tried and tried, but there was no money. I looked in all my pockets, and he had one pocket. He will never look in it. He said, even in that I looked. There was a special pocket. He will never look at it. And whenever people will ask if something is lost, you have looked in all the pockets, why not in this? He will say, because that gives me still hope. If I look in that also, hope is gone. Because I think maybe still there is a possibility, but I never look in it because I know well it is not there. Even in that special pocket I looked and no money. I was weeping and crying. But the wife was not interested in this. She asked Nasruddin, and were their wives like me also? She asked foolishly, as any woman will ask. Because no woman is interested in other beautiful woman. Rather, she felt jealous. She asked, what about wives like me? How much they were getting? Nasruddin said, that's why I screamed. Wives like you, those people had put them in bundles. One dozen, two dozen. And 1 rupee a bunch. They were selling wives like you. That's why I screamed. No money to purchase, and that is what is happening to my wife. But he was crying and weeping even out of the dream. Dreams are effective. They go deep. Because in an unconscious mind, really the distinction is very vague. What is dream and what is real is very vague. They are mixed. The boundaries are not so clear cut. The boundaries are blurred. Have you seen a child waking and weeping because he has lost a tie he saw in the dream? Are looking for the tie around where the tie has disappeared. But this child never dies in you. It dies only when you make much effort to become alert. Only then the dream and the reality become clear-cut distinctions. And once the vagueness is lost, once the boundaries are not blurred, once you become aware what is dream and what is reality, the dream stops. Because then the dream cannot continue. If you have become aware, the dream cannot continue. Even in a dream, if you become aware that this is the dream will stop immediately. So you never become aware in a dream that this is a dream. You always feel this is real. For anything to continue, your feeling is needed that this is real. You give reality through the feeling. If you withdraw the feeling, the dream disappears and only the reality remains. It is a dream that you are in this world, and it is the reality that you exist in the divine. It is a dream that you are in the market. It is the reality that you have never moved from the very center of existence, from the God. In the market, it is a dream you have moved. And the dream can continue. No time limit is there. If you think you are the body, this is a dream. You have never been a body. If you think you are born and you die, this is a dream. You have never been born and never you can die. That is impossible. Said Ikkyu, this is your delusion if you say, I come and I go. There is no one to come and no one to go, and there is no place to come and no place to go. Let me show you the pathless path, because then there can be no path. Because if there is no one to come and no one to go, no place to come and no place to go, then how the path can exist? So let me show you the pathless path on which there is no coming and no going. With his words, Ikkyu had revealed the path so clearly that Ninakava smiled and passed away. It happened. The words you have heard, but you are not Ninakava, not that much ready. You are not on your deathbed, that's the problem. You are still hoping something in life. Your dream has still much meaning for you. You have investments in your dream. You may have a desire to come out of the dream, but this desire is only half-hearted. The other part goes on saying, dream it more, a little more. It is so beautiful. One night, Mulla Nasruddin called his wife and said, bring my specs, because I have been seeing a beautiful dream and much more is promised to me. Bring my specs, because the place is not so lighted and I cannot see clearly. You may be having nightmares in those moments you feel how to drop out of the dream, but you have beautiful dreams also. Not only hellish dreams, you have heavenly dreams. And that's the problem. Unless you become aware that even a heavenly dream is a dream and useless, you are not on the deathbed. Your desire continues. You go on watering the world of the dreams, feeding it, helping it to grow. Ninakava was on the deathbed. He was dying. There was no future left. He was in a chaos. The whole system, the whole adjustment of body, mind and soul was getting looser and looser. Things were falling apart. He was not together. The nightmare was intense, because it is most intense in death. He was simply miserable in that moment. Death and no future. If there is no future, you cannot dream, because dreams need space, time to move. That's why death looks so dangerous, because it allows no time to think. You cannot hope, because there is no tomorrow. Death does not kill you, it simply kills the tomorrow. And tomorrow has been your very existence. You have never lived today. You have been always postponing for tomorrow, and death kills the tomorrow. It simply burns your calendar. Suddenly the clock stops. Time doesn't move. Without time, what can you do? How the mind can think, desire, dream? Death closes the door. That is the fear. Why death makes you so afraid and trembling and scared? Because there seems to be no beyond, no possibility to escape from it. You cannot do anything, because you cannot think, and you know only one thing, thinking, nothing else. Your whole life has been a thinking. Now death allows no thinking. Only a man who has been meditating and has realized no thinking before death will not be afraid, because he knows that thinking is not life. And he knows a different plenum of existence. He knows the depth, not the length of existence. He is not moving from this moment to that. He is not moving from today to tomorrow. He is moving in this moment deeper and deeper and deeper. In today, deeper and deeper and deeper. He is moving here and now in the depth. You touch this moment and you move to the another moment. You have a horizontal movement. From A to B, from B to C, from C to D. And the man who meditates goes on moving from A1 to A2 to A3 in the depth, not to be. He has no tomorrow. This here and now is the only existence. Then how there can be death for him? This moment you are alive. Only next moment you can die. This moment no one has ever died. This moment you are alive. And this man who meditates moves into this moment. How can he die? Death will happen on the periphery. He will come to know about it. It will be just as you come to know about a neighbor who is dead. He will come to know about it that the body is dead. This will be a news. He may even feel sorry for the body, but he is not dying. Ninakava was a meditator, just on the verge of enlightenment, is still clinging. You can take a jump into the abyss, but still you can cling to a creeper. When you can go on clinging, afraid, you are almost in the abyss. Sooner or later you will fall, but still a moment more, the mind says cling. He was clinging to the scriptures, to the Buddhas, to the words, doctrines. He was still repeating knowledge. Just a creeper. Sooner or later he will have to leave this. Because when life leaves you, how can words be retained? They will leave you. With this echo's revelation, he understood. He left the clinging. He smiled and passed away. You never smile. Either you weep or you laugh, but you never smile. A smile is just in the middle. It is difficult for you. Either you weep or you laugh. There are possibilities, two extremes. Try to find what this phenomena of a smile is. Only a Buddha smiles, because it is just in the middle. A smile has both a sadness in it, the sadness of the tears, and the happiness of laughter. A smile has both. A smile is never simple laughter. It has the extension of laughter and the depth of sadness. It is both. Look at Buddha, meditate on him, and you will see in his face both a sadness and a happiness, a blissful flowing of his being, and still a deep sadness. With these two chemicals, so to say, a smile is created. When you feel sad for everybody, then for the whole existence you feel sad, because they are unnecessary suffering. You cannot imagine the sadness of a Buddha. It is difficult for you. You only think that a Buddha is happy. He is happy as far as he himself is concerned. But for you, you cannot conceive his difficulty. Because he sees at you and you are unnecessary suffering. And nothing can be done. You cannot be helped. A disease that is not there and incurable. And he knows that just by the corner, just a turn of your being, and everything will be solved, but you will not take that turn. You will jump and you will do many things, but you will always miss that turn. You will grow up in dark, but somehow, miraculously, you always miss the door. You know how to miss the door. You are perfect in that. How to miss the door and always go on groping? A Buddha is in difficulty. because he has realized something which is there with you already. The same blissful existence, the same beauty, the same ecstasy that he has, you have. And you go on crying. And you are go on beating your chest. And you are in such a suffering. And nothing can be done. A sadness. It is said about Buddha that when he reached the door, the final door, beyond which there is no door, and you cannot come back, that is the ultimate. When he reached the door of Nirvana, the door was opened for him. There was welcome. Because in millions of years, once somebody reaches to the ultimate, but he turned his back towards the door and looked at the world. And they say he is still standing, he has not entered the door. The doorkeeper asks, what are you doing? For this you have been endeavoring for many, many lives. Now the door is open, come in. And Buddha said that unless everybody who is suffering there out enters, I cannot enter. I will be the last to enter. This is the sadness. The story is really beautiful. Nobody can stand on that ultimate door, that's true. There is no door like that and no doorkeeper. You fall and there is no way to stop yourself. The story is beautiful, that shows in a symbolic way the consciousness of a Buddha, the trouble, his anguish, his suffering. It is not his suffering now, it is the suffering of others that makes him sad. As if you have become awakened and everybody else is fast asleep and they are dreaming. And dreaming nightmares, screaming, jumping, crying, weeping. And you know that these are just nightmares. But these people are so drunk and so fast asleep, you cannot help. If you try to wake them, they become angry. They say, why are you disturbing our sleep? Who you are? You cannot wake them and you have to see their suffering and suffer it. Buddha is sad for you. Buddha laughs deeply. His whole being is filled with laughter. Just like a tree has come to a flowering. Everything has become a dance. And these both meet in him. The laughter that bubbles and goes on coming out. And still he cannot laugh because of you. And the sadness that you create, they both meet. And the meeting creates a smile. A smile is both laughter and tears. You cannot smile. You can laugh. You can weep. When you weep, how can you laugh? Because weeping, it is always for yourself. It is a single element. When you laugh, you laugh. How can you weep? Because laughing is for yourself. In Buddha, the ego has disappeared. Now he is no more. The meeting has happened with the all. Two elements meet. His consciousness which has become perfect. And all around millions of consciousnesses which are perfect suffering. Unnecessary suffering. Without any cause suffering. These two meet. And a sad and yet happy, a smile comes to his face. He cannot weep because it is so foolish what you are doing. He cannot laugh because that will be too hard on you. At the most, he can smile. This happened So Ismail has become a symbol of one who has become enlightened. With his words, Ikkyu had revealed the path so clearly that Ninakava smiled and passed away. Then it was not a death, but just a passing. Passing to another world, passing to another birth. Then nobody was dying. And if you can die with a smile, you know the art of dying. And the whole religion consists in the art of dying. It is nothing else than that. Now, I will repeat the first story we started, so that you don't forget it. So easy to forget. And you would like to forget it. Forgetfulness is a trick. These 10 days we have been talking about no water, no moon. It will remain just a talk, words and words and words, if you are not ready to die. Be on your deathbed, be in Ninakava. Then these words are so clear, as ikkus were never. I tell you, these words are so clear as ikkus were never. You can also smile and pass away. Remember, the nun Chiono studied for many years, but she was unable to find enlightenment. One night she was carrying an old pail filled with water. As she was walking along, she was watching the full moon reflected in the pail of water. Suddenly, the staves holding the bamboo pail together broke and the water rushed out. The reflection of the moon disappeared and Chiono became enlightened. Afterwards, she wrote this poem, "This way and that way, I tried to keep the old pail together, hoping the weak bamboo would never break. Suddenly, the bottom fell out. No more water. No more reflection of the full moon in the water. Emptiness in my hands. Go with emptiness in your hands, because that's all. That's all I can offer to you. And nothing is greater than that. This is my gift. Go with emptiness in your hands." If you can carry emptiness in your hand, then everything becomes possible. Don't carry possessions. Don't carry knowledge. Don't carry anything that fills the pot and becomes the water, because then you will be seeing only the reflection. In wealth, in positions, in houses, in cars, in prestige, you will see only the reflection of the full moon. And the full moon is there waiting for you. Let the bottom drop. Don't try this way and that way to protect the old pail. It is not worth. Don't protect yourself. It is not worth. Let the pail break down. Let the water flow. Let the moon in the water disappear. Because only then you will be capable to raise your eyes towards the real moon. It is always there in the sky. But emptiness in the hand is needed. Remain more and more empty. Think more and more yourself empty. Behave more and more as if you are empty. By and by, you will have the taste of it. And once the taste comes, it is so beautiful. Once you know the taste of emptiness, You have known the very meaning of life. Carry emptiness. Drop the pail of water, which is your ego and your mind and your thoughts. And remember, no water, no moon, emptiness in the hand. Enough.